Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 314, my chat with Chicago-based creative Charlotte Brown. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You can get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts, including Yes But Why, but you guys know that because you're listening and I appreciate it. But if you're one of the listeners who's not on Audible, get on it because it's where all the cool kids are. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. We are here to advise you on whatever it is that's going on with your podcast. Are you just starting it? Are you in the middle of it and you're not really sure what to do? Did your co-host just leave you? Have you started recording or did some recordings and it doesn't sound good and you don't know why? We can help you with any one of those things. So go to podcastcadet.com. There's lots on the website for you if you need any help. But if it's not up there, go ahead and contact us through the contact form and we'll get in touch with you and help you with whatever you need. We just want to help new podcasters. Oh, and if you happen to buy something from us, you can use code YBY20 to get 20% off. We want to help you. PodcastCadet.com. This week, Yes But Why chatted with improviser Charlotte Brown about teching theater, writing comedy, and seeing Amber Ruffin. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 314, creative multi-potentialite Charlotte Brown connects improvisers all over the world. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
Yeah, so when I was younger, I had a friend, and his name was Tommy, and I just remember like us playing like Power Rangers. And like, I was always like a super tomboy and like, I hated like going to sleepovers. And I remember a lot of times like calling my mom and being like, I don't want to be here anymore. Can you come pick me up? And then at some point I finally grew out of that and stopped getting like homesick and being able to like spend the night at places. But yeah, like most of the time, like I was just... I've always been interested in art, and I was always fortunate because my mom, she used to be a professional photographer. And so I got her hand-me-down computers. So I was just always like monkeying around with them and like Photoshop and everything. And so like growing up, I didn't have like a ton of friends other than like kids that were like my mom's friends' kids. And so like, I did a lot of stuff just, like by myself. Yeah. And a lot of drawing and painting and all that stuff.
Now, did you hate sleepovers because you were like super over all the girly girl stuff? Or was it like girl sleepovers and then it got too like weird and high pitched for you? Or because I could see that.
Yeah. I think it was partially that, and then also just like, especially when I was younger, like being homesick and wanting to go home. But yeah, like I remember in like elementary school, like I was at a sleepover with at my friend Hallie's house, which like, was this huge giant mansion. Cause her dad is like a professional, like both her parents were professional golfers. And it's actually really funny, and this is kind of a bit of a side tangent, but one of my friends who I met doing online improv, her husband is like a book, like, I don't know, like agent or something where like he like helps like market books and stuff. And it was really funny because my friend had posted, she had posted like a picture of the books that he was like representing. And then one of them was Hallie's dad's book. And I was like, this is so weird because it's like, you know how like everything is just like so interconnected, and for that to like come full circle, because I haven't talked to Hallie in like since like high school basically.
Yeah, wow. It was just Hallie's really dad still writing books though, just churning them out.
Yeah, if you want to learn how to be a better golfer,
yeah, I mean there's a market for that for sure.
Yeah,
keep writing them books, bro.
Yeah,
man, wow, what a small world, what a weird little like corner. And it's not even like, oh, somebody that lived near us or growing up, it's like an online improv friend, like what, so wild.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's a crazy how we get connected in that way, and how like just little connections really make us see more in the world. You know, speaking of which, it made me think of, you mentioned that you got hand-me-down computers from your mom. Did you learn anything cool about your mom from like going through her files?
No, I don't remember like ever doing that. I think like she was smart enough to like wipe them before she gave them to me.
smart mom, do that.
I mean, yeah. So I don't remember ever finding anything. I just vividly remember like in the LimeWire years, just downloading a ton of music, which is a very funny and specific memory that just popped into my head.
Oh man, no, I remember that, man. I remember Napster. I remember when they told us Napster was illegal, and I was like, oh my goodness, I've definitely been doing things that are illegal. I didn't know. Oh my God. So you had computers throughout your childhood? Were you playing games on them as well, or just tooling around on Photoshop like you said?
I was actually talking about this with a group of friends the other day, and we were all talking about like what games we remember from our childhood, and they were all very specific but all very different, like Math Munchers, like Putt Putt Goes to the Moon. I don't remember this other one, but I remember like it had like a yellow fish character. And then there's this very specific game that when I was in elementary school, when we like finished some of our work, we were allowed to play. And I think it was for Macs only. And you could play like the whole game. The point was you got to play as like a fish, and then like you would grow into like different fish. So it was like teaching you all about like the food chain and like different fish in the ocean and stuff. And that one I really liked. And then of course there's the classic Oregon Trail, which still today is a hit.
Total classic.
Yeah.
Helpful for us all. If only we learned more about living in a rough lifestyle from that. Yeah. Oh man.
I think it's funny because we definitely didn't learn like anything about getting dysentery from Oregon Trail. We're just like, you know, you think we would have been prepared for the pandemic from the Oregon Trail, but.
Right? At least had some more stabby knives to help us out in the world. See, I'm clearly quite older than you. The first video games that I ever played were not visual. They were the kind where you just typed in words and just like I stab the ghoul. It's like the ghoul says, haha, I'm a ghost, you can't stab me. Things like that.
Oh, I was just gonna say, and then like outside of educational games, I definitely remember playing like Mario Kart and the James Bond GoldenEye game on the Nintendo 64, which looking back, I find hilarious now, because like every several years, there's always like those like op-ed pieces that go around of like, video games make people violent. And I'm like, all right, I guess I don't know what that says about me then, because I was definitely playing James Bond GoldenEye before I was like in elementary school. And then my dad would always get so mad at him because there was like this one level and I barely remember it, but like I would just hide in the air vent and then like always beat him. And he would get so bent out of shape about it. And I'm like, looking back, I'm just like, if you didn't like getting beat by me. Like you were an adult. You probably could have just beat me. Like you didn't have to make it a thing if you didn't want to.
You think he was pretending? Was he putting on a show? But like, oh man, you beat me. I'm so upset.
I have no idea. Who knows with my dad?
It's tough because there is a certain level of that with your children. You know what I mean? Where you're like, where I let my kid, you know, beat me at games. And then I definitely do a like, what? I didn't. Oh, man. What? You telling me you won? You know?
Yeah.
And then he laughs. We had to dispel him of the notion of going, ha ha. We're like, no, no. You can enjoy winning. You can have a good time with it. You cannot make fun of somebody for losing. No.
Yeah. Thank you. That makes me think of when I was younger and like in elementary school age. And then I would have friends who would come over. We would play like Sorry and other board games. And I would get so mad because like it's 100% like chance. But like even as a small child, like I should have realized like I definitely had a perfectionist streak. So it wasn't necessarily that I was mad that I was losing. I just was mad because I like was doing bad at a game that is completely up to chance. So I would get so mad and like flip the board.
Oh, all right.
Which was not, yeah. And then my mom would be like, you need to stop doing that. And I didn't listen for far too long.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I talk about that kind of stuff to my kid all the time, though. Like, he definitely wants to win. He definitely wants to, you know, when it doesn't happen, he gets really mad. And we have to have discussions like that about, like, well, you know, you really get to just allow for whatever happens to happen. And, you know, if you go nuclear and flip the table over, well, then you definitely lost. Like, there's just no way of getting around that. Like, not only did you lose, but, you know, now you got a bad attitude. Nobody likes that. Can't have a bad attitude. Sorry, bud.
Yeah.
Believe me, we know anger. I got it. I'm from Boston. It's part of my blood. But, you know, so you mentioned your perfectionist streak. If only you knew. At what point in your life did you find out?
I don't know. Like, I was talking to my therapist, and she was like, yeah, like, because she asked me if I always thought I was, like, an anxious person, and I was like, I don't know, like, I thought I was just shy. Like, when you're a child, you don't have anything to compare your experience to anyone else's until you're an adult, and you're, like, at a party, and then you tell, like, some story that you personally think is funny, but then everyone else's reaction is, oh, no. So, like, I don't know, like, I think I've always... like, especially because both my parents, like my mom, she was one of the first female firefighter paramedics in like Orange County.
Whoa.
And then my dad, like he was a Navy SEAL. So like, they're just both very high strung people. And so like, I was just always expected to be good at things because they're like, if you're good at things, that's how you like advance in life and get ahead. And then, So they were always like putting pressure on me to do like super well in school and super like the school that I went to kindergarten until the end of my freshman year, they legitimately, it was a private school and they legitimately as like kindergartners made like everyone take a test. That was like basically like an age appropriate like SAT. It was just like looking back, I was just like, this is wild. Why are we doing this to children? And so I never really realized like how hardcore my school was until I changed schools. And then like looking back, I had friends from the first school that I went to who graduated high school with like their AA degrees because they took so many AP classes. Like they were taking 4 and 5 AP classes like a semester. And there are some people who are really smart who are taking 7 AP classes a semester, which is like a full class load of just pure AP classes, which I only took 3 AP classes my entire high school career, and I hated my life. So I couldn't imagine, like, bless them for doing that. And so it's just like, until I switched schools, I didn't realize like how competitive and how like just much I was expected to be smart. And then when that expectation kind of dropped and classes were easier, I was like, oh cool, I'm not gonna do anything. And so like I went from being like a straight A student to getting like mostly A's, but you know, some B's and C's mixed in there.
Did you feel better though? Was it like low stress, like less stress?
It was, yes, it was a lot less stress, but the expectations for my parents was still there.
Sure.
So it was stressful just because like, they're like, why are you getting more B's and C's now? Like you're smarter than that. And I'm like, looking back, I'm just like, none of this is going to matter anyway. So why worry about it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I am one of the later, of my college friends. I had kids the latest. And so one of my friends from college, her kid graduated from high school when my kid turned two. And I remember he was all stressing out about SATs and his mom was stressing him out. And I went over to him and I go, hey, I just want you to know, no one cares. Like for the rest of your life, no one's ever going to ask you what your SAT scores are. Maybe at a drunken party, very rarely. It will not matter. You can, it's not about jobs. It's not about credit. You can buy a house. If you get, have a bad SAT score, it doesn't matter at all. This is like a one-time scenario where it might matter. And then that's it. Like, don't stress about it. And don't stress if you get bad grades in high school because no one checks ever. They hardly even check if you have a high school diploma.
That's one thing I've been talking to my therapist a lot about how growing up, because I was in such that like high pressure environment, my entire identity was just being good at school, which really sucks as an adult because like you said, no one cares. And jobs nowadays, it's like I have so many friends who have like master's degrees who are underemployed. And I'm just, it's wild looking back, like how much pressure I put on myself. And that becoming my whole identity now is just like, okay, like, what do I actually like to do? Because I mean, I'm back in school, but that's not entirely why.
What are you going to school for now, though? It's creative, right?
Yeah. I was always a creative person, but I very much, and like, it was always funny because my mom in particular was trying to steer me away from being a creative person, even though she is a creative person. And then I kind of found out that my dad wanted to be a creative person, sort of. And then like after my grandfather passed away, because my grandfather, he was in the Navy, but when he was in the Navy, he created a lot of like the training videos for the military. And then so when my dad knew that his draft number was really high, he enlisted so he could choose what he wanted to do. And when he first enlisted, he wanted to do the same thing with like the training videos. And then I don't remember why or what the disconnect was, but then he became a Navy SEAL and then all the creativity got drained out of him. And so it's just really interesting because I was always like, I was just that type of child that like, I would just remember like commercials. Like there is this one commercial from, I think somewhere in the 90s, maybe 2000 range, that was like a Sprite subliminal messaging like campaign. And no one ever knows what I'm talking about, but I vividly remember it. So
what happens in the commercial? Tell me about it.
Well, it's just like things that like, it would just like flash things. And then like, I don't really remember other than that. And that it was Sprite or like Coke related.
Was it like limes? Or was it like the beach? Or was it like, were they trying to show you what you could attain if you lived a Sprite lifestyle?
I have no idea. I don't remember. And then there was also like, I think it was some car insurance commercial where it was like the person had the trunk monkey and then like the monkey would hop out of the back of the car. Yeah. See, that's just the garbage that's floating around in my brain for no reason.
Nah, man, that's like classic Geico commercial. That is like classic Geico. They're, you know, someday they're going to do a documentary about advertising in the 90s and 2000s, and Geico is going to feature high highly because they put so much effort into weird commercials and you're like, why is this commercial about car insurance? But you know it's about car insurance, so I feel like it won, right? Yeah. Like, so also, who cares what happened in that Sprite commercial? You're still thinking about it. It won.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Geico, it makes me think of how, and this is a complete side tangent, do you remember when they tried to make the Caveman TV show?
Yes, I loved it.
I don't remember watching it all at all. I just remember it being like, wait, you're turning this commercial character into a TV show?
Oh, it was a bad idea, but I was for it. I was like, yeah, let's see what happens.
Like let's not give the charismatic lizard their own show. Let's give the arguably less popular character that everyone was like, I don't know how I feel. But anyways, yeah. So just like, I've always been interested in media and stuff. And until my grandfather passed away, I never like really knew why, and I think like kind of like subconsciously, like I had that kind of floating around in my background.
You know, it's thinking about our parents and grandparents' generations, like they just had such a crappy experience of being told they couldn't be who they were forever. Like, thank God we live in a moment where, you know, it's cool for us to be who we are, and there's a, you know, there's a cultural movement supporting us in whatever choice that we're going to make. You know, sure, there's people against it, whatever, people don't like things, who cares? But like, there's definitely like a cultural movement of like, be who you are, like embrace your own strengths. And like, I'm so glad I live in this time, because like you're saying, like there were things, strengths in your dad and in your grandparents, and like they didn't lean into those or check them out because people were like, no, you're a man, you're gonna work, you're gonna go to the army, and you know, oh, what, you like videos, fine, you're gonna make training videos, you're not gonna make fun videos. Like, he wanted to make like SNL comedy videos, and they were like, no, you're gonna teach people how to put their boots on. He's like, all right, I guess, you know, like. But the idea also that like he didn't even tell you about it is fascinating to me, because I have a similar thing where like my grandfather was a cop in Boston in a rough time. So the fact that he was just drinking 24/7 my entire childhood makes sense, right? You're like, yeah, you saw a lot. It's cool. But he got older, and when he got older, when he got sick, he couldn't drink anymore, and he became sober, and all of a sudden he had a personality. And I was like, oh, he's why we're funny. Like, because I'm funny, and my aunt's funny, and my uncle's funny, and like the family is funny, but we were always like, where do we get it? Because my grandmother is not funny. So we were like, where did this even come from? And then finally, when he was sick, he was in the hospital, we would go to talk to him. He was suddenly this brand new person, and he would make jokes, and he would like be messing with the nurses. And it was like, oh, now I understand where it all came from. So when you said like, when I just found out that my grandfather wanted to make videos, and I was like, yeah, I want to make videos too. Like, yeah, it sucks that that generation had to hide away who they were and didn't get to explore it even at a later point in their life.
Yeah, like my dad and I, like the reason why I got into comedy is because I always like watched like SNL with my dad, like the 70s and 80s SNL. And then like my dad and I are just like that very sarcastic, dry sense of humor where like we'll make fun of each other. And that's how we show we love each other. We're just like constantly roasting each other. And then my mom has no sense of humor. She takes herself way too seriously. And it's always funny because like everyone always says that cliche, like as you get older, you like become more like your mom. And like, it's just so funny because like I definitely am at my mom, because like she just gets really stressed out about a lot of things, and like I'm pretty sure that like she probably also has anxiety. And like it's just funny to see like I mentioned earlier, like when you're a kid you don't really have any like sort of comparison, but like as you become an adult, you talk to other people, you hear other people's experience, and then you're like, oh wait, what? This makes so much more sense now, that the things that were happening. But yeah. So I've always been like really interested in media, and it was really funny because when my grandfather passed away, my aunt gave my dad like a box of my grandfather's stuff that was just like papers and stuff that she didn't want. And then it was really funny because my dad and I were going through it, and my grandfather also did like reporting for like a local news station, and he would do like the flyover like traffic things. And apparently, like whenever this was, I don't remember what time frame it was, but there apparently used to be like a Six Flags attraction in Florida. And in the letter, it was really funny because they were like, hey, you always fly over Disney, like can you like give us a shout out? And like I make a joke of like, well, apparently he didn't, Disney's the only thing that's left, so but who knows, I don't know if that was the case. It was probably just, you know, Disney is a machine, so even back then it was probably putting tons of things out of business.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a corporation that convinces the state you live in to create laws that exempt you from laws, that's pretty, that's a solid business model. And I bet you they were like, oh, hey, Six Flags, by the way, we just bought the swamp you're on, so now we own it. Get out. We're just putting a new ride there. It's called a parking lot.
And this is another side tangent, but that makes me think of Disney bought out Blue Sky Studios, which is the animation studio that made Ice Age. And then they finally, this is such a dumb thing, but so there is this character in Ice Age, Scrat, who is like the like prehistoric like squirrel who was like always in every single movie, which there another side tangent that I'll put a pin in for later, but like there are way too many sequels to Ice Age. Like what I get, and then now they're making a spinoff TV show because Disney now owns it, but I digress. That's a whole nother thing. But so they, as since Blue Sky Animation Studios got shut down, by Disney, they literally made a short little animation of Scrat finally getting the acorn. And I was not emotionally prepared for that to happen because I was just scrolling. You know how you do? It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. You're just scrolling through Facebook. And then I saw that and I was like, wow, this is so upsetting on so many levels. And it's also really funny because the first Ice Age movie, when I was growing up, I was really lucky and I won tickets to see like a pre-screening of Ice Age the movie from Radio Disney, which is such a of all movies and all things I could have been like excited to see, like
it was just clearly so it's a hit. There's a thousand sequels. People love it. I've definitely seen it a couple of times.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a terrible one. I mean, as far as like being a mom of a four-year-old, I watch a lot of kid movies, and there's some where I'm like, yeah, we're not watching that one again. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, all right, I could do that a few more times, because he likes to watch things over and over. So if I can get into it, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Let's watch that again. Ice Age is pretty good though. I mean, also solid actors in that too, you know, so that helps, helps. It's a fun kind of situation. I noticed that you're interested in, you know, what, because you grew up in Florida, you're aware of like the studios and whatnot creating things in your area. Was that something that you like got interested in, and that was how you kind of like reflected your creative love? Like, I'm obsessed with IMDb. I can't watch a television show without literally just scrolling IMDb and finding out what other shows people were in and stuff like that. But like, is like the movie studios and film studios in your area something that like was the first thing that got you into, oh, I'm interested in movies, I want to make movies?
So when I went for my undergrad degree, I majored in communications and minored in journalism and film studies because I had originally picked the college that I wanted to go to because I was trying to pick the least sciencey science that I could possibly do. But no one told me that, like, there's colleges that you go to because you want to be a scientist and figure out, like, why people get, like, dementia, or because you want to be a practicing psychologist. I also didn't understand that colleges are a business. So the psychology major was one of, like, the biggest majors. So they would just over admit a ton of people and then have statistics be their weeding out class and then tell everyone who, like, failed statistics, like, oh, be a human development major. It's the same thing. But that's a whole nother side tangent. When I originally picked my college, I was going to double major in creative writing and psychology because at that moment in time, I wanted to be a political speech writer. And then I realized, like, oh, because I was very on board. Like, my parents are both very, they're not necessarily, like, when I was growing up, they're involved politically, but just because, like, my dad, he is now a retired cop, and then he was, like, in, like, I don't remember what they're called, but, like, one of the, like, it's gonna bother me that I can't remember what it is, but he was in one of, like, the fancy, like, I guess unions, I don't know what it was, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, the police are in unions. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so, like, he was always, like, kind of, you know, both of my parents are a little bit hot-headed, and they sometimes, it's funny to see me versus them because they're very opinionated and I am also very opinionated, but because I have social anxiety, sometimes I just know and, like, don't have the guts necessarily to say certain things where, like, my parents will just say whatever, whenever, and they feel like it, which is both a blessing and a curse sometimes. Yeah. And so it was just, like, interesting because, like, I, like, being in that kind of environment, like, they were always, like, you know, raising me to, like, do community service. And, like, so I was kind of always, like, at least tangentially politically active. And then growing up, I loved watching The West Wing. So, which I wasn't sure, like, if I wanted to be Allison Janney or just, like, you know, be her character, like, if, and so I've always had, like, an interest in politics, but then I realized that I didn't want to be around people who were into politics, if that makes sense.
Oh, I do. I understand. Yep. Yeah. Oh. Sounds like you really just wanted to be Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. Cause, like, people would always be like, and even now my parents are like, oh, so, cause I've just collected, like, all the majors that are, like, the ones that are viewed as, like, unemployable and, like, have fun being in unemployment. And cause after I got my bachelor's degree from Eckerd College, I went to Valencia College, which used to be Valencia Community College. And in the, like, late 80s, early 90s, when Disney and Universal had, like, their back lots working, they created a whole film program so that they could have people who knew, like, the below the line positions. And so I went back to film school because I wanted to be a creative person. And then I was just like, the film industry seems fun because it played into, like, journalism. And after that, I really wanted to be a documentary filmmaker because when I was in my undergrad, we got to go to the Sundance Film Festival. And I remember three movies from the year that I went. Cooties, which was this movie that was created by the creator of Glee and then one of the creators of Saw. And it's, like, a very fun, it's actually a comedy and it's not that gory because I'm a weenie when it comes to gore. And there was only slightly a little bit of gore at the beginning, but, like, nothing bad. And, like, the whole premise of it is that a group of kids, it's a group of teachers, and then the kids who haven't, like, reached puberty, like, start getting cooties and turning into zombies, essentially. And then that was the year Whiplash was there, And that's one of my all-time favorite movie experiences, because sitting in the Egyptian theater with like 1,500 other people, and then all of us just gasping at the same time, like, oh man, that's one of the main things that I've missed about the pandemic, is like the communal aspect of going to see shows and movies with other audience people. Because like, I know that everyone is like, yay, on demand, I can just watch whatever when I, you know, in my pajamas at my house. And I'm like, no, but the experience of going to the movies is so good. And like, I get people are jerks and on their phones and like being loud, but like, when you see a good movie or like a show, like when it hits, it really hits. Like, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I totally understand. I haven't gone to the movies in a long time, except for the Marvel movies, because, you know, it was expensive. But we would go for the Marvel ones because we were like, well, it's huge. Like, it needs to be on the big screen. And then we'd go with a big crowd. And you're right. There's something great about all being in the room. I want to say I saw, it wasn't Endgame, but it was one of the like big final ones where there was like a huge battle scene. And I remember the whole room just like getting amped, like together, like in this moment. And everyone was like, and like little things happened and people were like, yeah, wah! You know, like people reacting to different moments, like, and you're like in this communal experience. It was really great. Yeah. There's something really great about that. I enjoy that. I enjoy that with live theater too. You know, that's another reason why I like improv a lot, is we're all together on this journey. You know, you don't get a lot of communal experiences in life, especially in our culture. It's a lot of individualism. Do what you want on your own. You're like, I guess that's fine. But like when we get to do stuff all together, there's something. I mean, even, and again, pandemic be damned, of course, but at the same time, like, the one thing that I really kind of enjoy about the pandemic is that we all went through it. And so every person from every walk of life, everywhere, you can be like, you can kind of reference it a little bit in small talk, and people will connect. People who, like, would not connect in the regular world, you can like make a heart-to-heart connection with a person because they went through it too. And so there's something really fascinating about that. And I personally am interested to see how culturally that will change as we get further away from it. Like, and when there's like kids who, like my kid's 4, he's not going to remember it. He's not going to have like a real memory of it. He will know that he was alive during it because of history, but like he won't know what it means. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And until he's older, and then he's like, wait, what happened? And you're like, yeah, man. Like, it was crazy. Like, we just sat there for years.
Yeah, I'm just laughing because I took a class last quarter that was like, mostly underclassmen. So they're all like born in like the 2000s. So they have no idea. Like, and I can't remember how I started talking about it, but like someone brought up like September 11th and they're like, yeah, I wasn't even born yet. And I'm like, oh no. That's just like, so I think
it's
interesting.
Is that real? I guess so. Yeah, it's 22. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, there's people who were born after September 11th who are literally of drinking age, which is wild to think about. But yeah, so it's just like interesting because it's like for me, like I think I was in like maybe like third or fourth grade when September 11th happened. So like I remember like being alive, but I didn't really necessarily understand like the implications of it. Yeah. And like there's a lot I don't remember of it. So I think it's interesting because I also was like just missed the like YouTube being created thing because I was in like middle school, so I wasn't like really old enough to fully be like, I'm gonna start creating YouTube videos and putting them out on the internet. So it's really, for me, it was really exciting because I feel like with the pandemic, it opened up a lot of opportunities because everyone was sitting at home to be creative and figure out how to do things in ways that we could have always done, but never had the incentive to do until now.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned a few times, you know, your shyness and, you know, like your, I'm going to reframe, you've said anxiety, I'm going to say sweetness, softness. do you think that, during the pandemic, when you made connections with people across the world, did that help empower you, give you more confidence to, you know, do the kind of creative things that you wanted to do? I mean, it seems like you, you know, throughout your life, you were, you know, your parents were dealt a be really intense kind of vibe in their lives, and they put it on you. But, you know, you found film a little bit, you know, you got there. But did you find a way to, like, really make it your own until the pandemic? Had you been putting things together, or was the chance to suddenly connect with people in this very safe space, even though the internet isn't in and of itself safe, but I'm going to say, like, improv, Zoomprov rooms were pretty safe. How did it come out for you?
Well, for me, like, I always joke that, like, I started doing improv in 2017 because I had always had friends, like, growing up, all my friends were in band and theater, but I was always too shy and, like, too scared to audition. And then, so in 2017, I started working at Universal Studios, which, that's a whole tangent I could go down, but so I was still living with my parents at that time, and so I had, and I'm doing air quotes right now, disposable income. So I started taking improv classes, and I always joke that improv taught me how to be a performative extrovert, and, like, turn, because it's like a lot of people when you're first starting, like, out in improv, like, talk about how, like, you have an on stage persona, and, like, you're playing a version of yourself, even if you're doing a short form show and, like, you're introducing a game or whatever. It's like, that's still a version of yourself. It's you as the host and not just, like, you on stage. And so, yeah, like, I have definitely gotten way more, like, outgoing just because I've learned how to, like, turn it on more and just gotten more comfortable being in social situations. Like, I still, like, I had an audition for an improv thing the other day, and I stood outside for literally, like, I was, like, 30 minutes early, and then I stood outside the venue for, like, 15 minutes because I was like, am I too early? Like, is it gonna be weird if I just walk in? Like, it, whatever. And I made it, like, this whole thing, and then I was almost late because I stood outside for so long. But yeah, and then after I got my film degree, my technical certificate in film production, I was very much on the, I am going to try as hard as I possibly can to get into the film industry as a PA. And there is nothing happening in Florida. I mean, there is small things, like, one of my best friends from college, like, Haley, I love her so much, but she discovered that she likes being a script supervisor. So she's just being a scripty on all these super low budget indie films, and the stories she tells me are so funny. But I'm like, Haley, you just need to move to Atlanta so you can start getting legitimate jobs. And then so I tried to do that for very and when I was in my undergrad, I had volunteered at the Gasparilla International Film Festival and the Sarasota Improv Festival. So I had a ton of friends who were making stuff, but of course they were, like, you know, paying out of their pockets, so they were just, like, barely covering their costs, let alone having money to pay anyone. So, like I mentioned before, I was still living with my parents at that time, but then it got to a certain point where they were just like, hey, can you stop spending $100 in gas driving to Tampa and St. Pete, like, every other weekend? That would be great. And I was just like, okay. So life kind of got in the way. And then I picked up improv. And then, yeah, like, I would definitely say that the online space really allowed me to kind of get my foothold in a way that I don't think would have been possible otherwise, just because a lot of people chose not to do online improv, which is cool. No judgment. I get it. Like, it's a pandemic. There's a lot happening. Like, there's still a lot happening. Like, but I'm really, like, I was talking to a friend the other night, and he was talking about how he was impressed with me because I just popped up in like every single thing that I could. And so I know like a ton of people, and I've done stuff like for the nursery in London, like the hideout in Austin, Texas. So like, I've just been all over the place. And so it gave me a lot of opportunities. And then early on in the pandemic, like I was doing a ton of stuff with the hideout. And I remember like the first show that I did tech for was in June 2020. So I was like, I immediately jumped on the bandwagon. I'm like, I can't sit here by myself in my apartment alone for however long this is going to be. And so I accidentally like backwards fell into like really finding that I love to do tech because I have no theater background. And so I just started doing it because I had been interested, and I had kind of been shadowing like a couple of the techs at like my local improv theater back home in Orlando, but most of them worked at Universalist techs. So they weren't really the improv theater wasn't really invested in like training me because they had like people who already knew what they were doing as like a job. And so when the rise of the pandemic happened, no one knew what was happening. And so it really just layered the playing field of, you know, people who've been doing improv for like as long as I've been alive, and then people who just started doing improv during the pandemic who had never done improv in person. And like, we were all on the same playing field.
The thing that I wondered was, you know, you're like your friend noted, you're involved in a lot of things. Like, I definitely saw your name and saw you posting stuff on the improv groups a ton before we ever had a conversation.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, like, let's be honest. We are connected through a workshop. Like, yeah. Like, I've seen your name a bunch of times, and then when I saw that you were in the workshop with me, I was like, oh, okay, I can talk to her. You know what I mean? But like, you were so connected, and you're involved with all sorts of different things. So I saw you in all sorts of different communications with people all over the world, like big deal improv people. And like, that's very impressive. And you're telling me this story that you're like shy and like unsure to get involved. Like, no way. That's not the Charlotte I have been like Facebook stalking for months at a time. Like, I definitely almost befriended you 3 or 4 times. And then I was like, she's busy. Like, leave her alone. Like, she doesn't know who you are. You haven't talked to her on any of the groups. You're just reading what she says. Like, leave her alone. And so then when we were in the workshop together, I was like, oh, hey, what's up? Yeah. We're together. Yeah. Like,
I was actually really excited too, because, and I told you this offline, but like when I first started doing improv, I became like a massive nerd, and I was just like trying to find like, and like I was having a really bad time because none of my teachers knew what to make of my anxiety and like the fact that I literally like was eating shit on stage every single class. And like, it was such a bad time. But so I was just trying to read every single book and listen to every single podcast that I could get my hands on. And then I remember at some point, I don't remember if it was all of PGraph or just one of them, but then they had done an episode of your podcast. And then so like, I kind of low key like knew who you were before too. So it's funny that you mentioned you're like Facebook, you know, looking me up on Facebook and stuff, because yeah, so it's interesting, like me kind of going back to like the whole full circle thing. But yeah, it was funny. I read like all the improv books, and then I will never forget, like 4 months into like starting doing improv, or actually I think it might have been the summer, so I think it was like around 6 months into doing improv, like I remember vividly I read the entire UCB manual front to back, which that's not how that is supposed to happen. Which is, and then I wondered why I was just so confused all the time, because like my improv theater is a short form theater. You never learn the Herald at all. And then I remember reading McNapier's book, which is just like, fuck the rules, you don't need them. And I'm like, no, but I do. I'm scared. But now that I've been doing improv for a few years, now I'm like, okay, I understand where you're coming from. I'm prepared to understand this. But when I first read them, it was funny because I had no theoretical background to understand them at all. And it was just like, I'm just like, someone tell me how to get out of my head. And I think Viola Spolin mentions like improv is such an experiential thing. Like you can't, like no one can tell you how to get out of your head. You just have to experience it. And I also think it was really interesting. And it's funny because my therapist, like normally like her, like she works with kids. And so it was really interesting because I keep telling her like, you should like read Spolin stuff. Cause it's like actually really applicable to like psychology. And like, I know just enough psychology to like be dangerous because that's what I minored in. Like I was like two classes away from a minor. And if I had stayed an extra semester, my undergrad, I could have tripled minored, but I was like, why would I do that? I can't do anything with a minor in psychology. I'm out. But it was really interesting about like how Spolin talks about, like, I think it's like in like the first chapter about like the idea of like whoever the facilitator for like improv, like the idea of like giving people feedback and like how that like, and then when people look to you for approval, like how it can like completely like mess them up. And she says it a lot more eloquently and like better, and it probably will make way more sense if you just read it, but it was really interesting because that's something that I definitely like through improv have been learning, like a slow arc of like, oh wait, like I don't just have to do what my parents tell me, I am my own person. Wow.
I mean, I feel like just listening to your story, it is a fascinating study on the idea that, like, you know, we are who we are, whether no matter who our parents are, like we are ourselves. This is what the vibe that came out when we were born into this body, like, so this is me. And sometimes you can find connections, you know, with your parents in whatever way, but life is so experiential, like you're saying, like, it's what you go through, it's how you react to what you go through. And then if you react to it in a different way, like, it's just really fascinating to think how different you have described yourself from your parents, and yet how totally awesome it is that you have this like individualism, that your way of looking at the world is totally different. And I hope to a certain extent for them, for your parents, that they are able to occasionally see the world through your eyes. Because I think the best thing you can do as a human is to try to understand the world through different people's eyes. And that's why I like playing characters and doing improv and trying different things, is because I'm like, man, I wonder what it'd be like to be like this. Well, let's try. And like get involved in that way. And I think that there's just something really beautiful about not only embracing who you yourself are, but like trying to understand the way other people see the world as well, both through theatrical means and then, you know, like you mentioned, psychological understanding of the way people are reacting and what they're seeing and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I really loved doing online improv, because I got to become friends with people all over the world. And early on in the pandemic, it was a lawless wasteland of just time. And so I started my entire sleep schedule, I was like a bat. I was nocturnal, and I was just up at all 4 a.m, 5 a.m, pulling all nighters for absolutely zero reason other than I was just like, well, it's 3 a.m, I might as well just not go to sleep, whatever. There's going to be zero consequences for this. So because of that, I got to take a lot of improv workshops and that were based out of like the European India time zone. And so it was really fun getting to know like all the Improv Comedy Bangalore improvisers, because all of them started out in playback theater. And so it's really interesting to see how the differences between how they approach improv. And like, I just really love improvising with all of them because they play animals and abstract ideas and stuff, like those types of non-human, non-concrete characters. And I found I really enjoyed that. And that's not something I would have ever been exposed to if it hadn't been for the pandemic and kind of what you're saying about like getting to experience things through other people's viewpoints is it was really interesting, the pandemic for me, because at the beginning of the pandemic, I will never forget, I was living with a roommate at the time, and I remember vividly having a conversation standing in the front yard on the phone with my mom, and we both were crying because we were like, you know, it was scary. We didn't understand. We didn't know what the COVID was at the time. And then I was like, and then my roommates were just being ridiculously unsafe, and I was freaking out because we were all, there was three, sort of four of us living in like a 600 square foot house, so we were all on top of each other. And so I was like, Mom, can I please move home? And she's like, yeah, like I don't want you to die. And I'm like, I don't want to die either. And then so it was interesting to see like how as I got more connected with the world, my mom spent, she's essentially retired, and she just spends all her free time scrolling through Twitter. And so it was really interesting to see how the arc, it's been slowly happening since like 2016, but it's like been really interesting because there was a time when I was like obsessed with cults, but not like cults, but like the people who deprogrammed cults, and so it was interesting to see how just indoctrinated with all the just nonsense she was seeing on Twitter, she like, and I'm just like, yeah, and kind of what you were mentioning about the internet before, like growing up in the 90s was an interesting thing because it was very much the emergence of the internet and like AOL and stuff, and my mom always being like, hey, don't talk to strangers on the internet, and like she has zero idea really what I was up to during the pandemic, and she also doesn't understand like how I do tech online for improv and sketch shows, even though I've tried multiple times to explain it to her. But I just think it's really funny. And I wrote a stand-up bit where I was like, yeah, like growing up in the 90s, my mom always like told me like, don't talk to strangers on the internet. And during the pandemic, that's all I've been doing. And now I'm making plans to go visit them in real life and stay in their houses with them.
I met this great guy. His name's Charlie Manson. We're going to like hang out. It's going to be great.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because like you said, like it's just allowed me so many connections. And it's also been really cool because I got to reconnect with some teachers. Like what I was talking about earlier, like the first summer that I did improv, I was really fortunate to live in Orlando because the Sarasota Improv Festival is amazing and I love it so much. And Will Luer is amazing. And he makes it a point to like bring in like different groups from literally all over the world. And I'll never forget the first summer of the shows that I saw. So it was Improv Boston, Dad's Garage, this all-female group called Stacked, who Stacey Smith is in, who I'll mention in a second, I'll get back to her. And then I saw P-Graph, and I'll never forget, like, after only seeing, like, Whose Line Style short form, and to see, like, people who treat improv like theater, like, blew my mind. And I was like, wait, Improv Boston, what are you doing? You're doing, like, New Choice in the middle of this long form scene? Wait, what? And like I mentioned before, I was very much still bent on the rules of like, you can't do that. Like, what are you doing? And then now I'm just like, please, if we just always do organic improv, I would be fine with that. Like, so it was really funny because of the pandemic, Stacey Smith, she doesn't live in Amsterdam because of the pandemic, but like because of the pandemic, I got to reconnect with her. And then it was interesting because I went home for the holidays and I reconnected with someone who was in my first workshop that Stacey taught. And it was me and this other guy, Steve Cobb. And it was funny because we were just catching up. And at the Palm Beach Improv Festival, they had a jam. And like, I never say this about myself, but I crushed the jam. And Steve and I were talking afterwards. And he's like, yeah, I remember being in Stacey's class, like workshop with you. And I don't think you said a single word. So like, it's been amazing to see like your growth as an improviser, because I think it's really hard with improv because it's so experiential and you're only like, unless you like record yourself and watch it back later, like you don't know, like you forget like where you came from. And like, for me, that's the thing that I find like the hardest is being like, yeah, especially during the pandemic, I got to do a lot of really, really cool stuff. One of the things that I'm most proud about is I made friends pre-pandemic with Sarah DeLille, who runs the Assembly Mexico City. And she messaged me because she's like, hey, I know you've been doing tech for sketch shows. Do you want to do a sketch show? Because the person who normally does tech for us is in it. And I was like, okay, cool. And like, they do a lot of English speaking stuff. And like, Sarah and I have talked, and I'm like, I know bits and pieces of Spanish, like to kind of figure out like, oh, they're talking about shoes, but like, not enough to understand what's happening or speak it really. And so I wrongly assumed, I messaged her at one point, and I'm like, hey, just curious, by the way, is this in Spanish or English? Because they do a lot of English speaking stuff. And she's like, oh yeah, it's all in Spanish. And I was like, okay, cool. But it worked out fine, because I was just like, hey, as long as there's no sound effects that need to happen in the middle of scenes, we're golden. And then so someone who is on their sketch team loved making spreadsheets. So what they did was they just put the last line of dialogue that I needed to listen to, and they just needed me to do the transitions. And so it was fine. So like, I think it's wild because I never would have had that opportunity if the pandemic hadn't happened. And I did tech for a show that I don't even speak the language of, which is wild to me and fun.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I love this idea that you were like, oh, hold on, wait, is it a language I speak? Oh no, it's not. Okay, cool, that's fine, I'm gonna keep doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the friends that we have all over the world, I wouldn't be surprised if you'd got to do a number of, you know, tech for languages you don't speak. And they're like, oh, by the way, this is all in Swedish. And you're like, cool, that's fine. Just give me a sound that I'm looking for at the end. I will do it.
Yeah. And now it's funny because I did tech for the first IRL sketch show that I've ever done a couple weeks ago. And that one was wild because I was in New York when they did like their tech rehearsal on a vacation. And then so when I came back, I was like, hey, just so you know, like, I'm on vacation, so I can't make it to your tech rehearsal. If you still need a tech, like, I'm down to do it. And then so we didn't even get to run all the tops and bottoms before the show. And I was just like, and then the person who was one of the people on the show was like, yeah, like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, well, I'm just going to trust that I put the cues in the right order and that it's going to work. Cause improv, cause I've had so many experiences where it was just like, because the technology for doing online stuff was so new, everyone was figuring it out together. And, you know, one of my friends, Brayden, who I met through doing stuff online through the Hideout, he's just like the chillest dude, and I appreciate him so much, because the first like big thing that we worked on was the scripted musical that was done entirely over Zoom, broadcast through OBS to YouTube, called Human Resources the Musical. And so we were using audio movers as a way to like deal with the latency so people could sing on Zoom. And I was just doing like the sound, like cues of like people's cell phones ringing and stuff. And it was wild because the first show, 3 hours before, audio movers stops working. And I was just like, I thought I broke it, because it was like the first thing during the pandemic that I've been doing. Like, I got, my friend Kenzie had asked me like, hey, our sound person, you know, had something come up, they can't do it. We open in 3 weeks. Do you want to do it? And I was like, sure. Just as long as we're clear. I've never done anything scripted in my entire life, but I trust you. So, and so another person on our team, Tosin, like explained, because I don't understand, like, I know how to use computers, I just am not like a computer programmer. So he sent an email to audio movers and was like, hey, what's going on? Because I think it was him who figured out that they're like, their server certificate or something expired. So what we had to do was Tosin knew that, like, if we all tricked our computers into being in a different time zone, that then it would, before the certificate expired, it would work. And so luckily Kenzie was in Hawaii visiting family, and so, like, Kenzie just still does not get enough credit for this at all. So for our first show, Kenzie had to build all the cues on the fly in GarageBand, and it was the most intense thing ever. So I was joking with the people that I was doing the in-person sketch show, is like, as long as the building doesn't catch on fire, like, short of that, like, nothing's gonna faze me, because I was already real stressed out when the human resources thing, like, I was so thankful we were on Zoom, because I was like full on having a meltdown, because I was just like, I ruined this for everyone, everyone's gonna hate me. So now I'm way more chill with tech, because it's like, the worst thing that could ever happen happened and I survived, so whatever. So, like, I'll do a sketch show in a language I don't speak, like, it'll be fun, like, if I mess up, whatever, like, as long as we're clear that that's what the what's probably gonna happen, like. So yeah, like, short of that happening, I'm not even bothered anymore, because, like I said, I used to be a perfect, and, like, I still very much am a perfectionist, so, like, I want to do everything and, like, over prepare, but at the end of the day, it's like, that's the thing that I think really keeps me coming back to even doing scripted stuff, is it's just like the adrenaline you get when you, like, especially with something scripted, when there's like, there's a whole choreographed, like, bit for the end of Human Resources, the musical, where our composer who created all the music for the show made like it would have been what an orchestra would have, like, used to, like, underscore a scene, but because we were on Zoom, like, it was just, it came down to me just playing the cues. So there was maybe like 10 or 11, and it was very much like a thing that I had to, like, nail it and then, like, turn off some cues while turning on other ones. And that adrenaline rush when I would get it, like, perfect, I was just like, yes. This is the fun part. And it's also just fun, especially, like, when you're doing improv. My favorite thing is when someone mentions a song or is like, oh, there's crickets, and then, like, you play crickets or the song, and then you can almost make them break, because, like, a lot of times, especially with, like, less so with online, but even still sometimes with online, improvisers aren't used to playing with, like, sound and, like, improvisers, so they're not expecting the thing that they said to happen. And then it's my favorite thing to just be like, oh yeah, now there's crickets, or you mentioned you're in a coffee shop and now there's coffee shop ambiance. And, like, especially, like, you know, on Zoom it was really fun because, you know, we had Spotify and everything at our disposal, so I could just be like typing in Spotify and then having that adrenaline rush of like, am I going to find the effect before it's irrelevant for me to play? And then getting it and just being like, yes, I did it. But yeah.
Oh man, that sounds so amazing. I feel like it's a real, like, renaissance for you to be in this power position now and, like, have all this, like, confidence to put these things together and, like, have found, you know, this way of being involved that, like, gives you the joy and the excitement all at once. Is there anything that you, over the years, like, and it maybe pandemic, maybe not, but, like, what's the big thing that you feel like, and it's okay if this is a weird question, but, like, what's the thing that you feel like you've accomplished for yourself as a creative? Like, at what point in your, like, goals are you now? And I guess follow-up question, what's the next step in your goals?
I think just finally figuring out and, like, admitting to myself that, like, I want to pursue being a creative person as a career. And because I've had so many different interests growing up, I was doing, like, visual art, photography, graphic design. Then I moved to filmmaking and all that stuff. And now I'm doing, like, tech. It's just, I finally feel like I figured out kind of what I want to do. And, like, especially since moving to Chicago in September, one of the things that the pandemic has really given me is just the boldness to be like, hey, I'm probably never going to see this person in real life. So if I send an awkwardly, like a message that like comes off a little bit awkward, oh, well, like whatever. Cause, the reason why I bring that up is, I was like, I follow like, you know, like Second City, everyone on social media. And it was funny because one of their stage managers had like posted like a selfie that the, or like the Second City, like main brand like Instagram story, like reshared her story. And then, so I just messaged her and I was like, hey, I hope this isn't weird. Like, I don't mean to bother you. And like, it was just like, like this much apologizing. And then like this actually just being like, hey, I have been doing tech for online improv and sketch shows. I would love to shadow you. Like, if that's cool. And then she's the person who, recommended me for the first in-person sketch show I did. So it's just, I think, I know it's really cliche, but like a lot, and a lot of people say it, but it's 100% true of just like, people like get excited when you're like, hey, I see the thing you're doing. That's pretty cool. And especially like when they're like techs, when like no one knows what they do, cause they're just, you know, in the dark hiding in the booth. And so I think it's definitely like the pandemic has like made me way more bold and just like completely just sliding into people's DMs being like, hey, do you need a tech, or like, hey, can we collaborate? And so it's just like, it's scary, but it's true. And like, it's such a cliche, but like just putting yourself out there is like the biggest thing. And I've just realized that even though I am a shy person, that people, like I mentioned, really get excited about wanting to share their knowledge. And yeah, and so like, I guess like the next thing for me is just, I am trying to figure out still a path that is financially sustainable. Because right now the only reason I can afford to live in Chicago is because of student loans, because I can't qualify for, you know, like a mortgage, but they'll just give me $100,000 for a degree that may or may not be helpful. Like, okay, makes a lot of sense, government. So I'm just trying to figure out and like continue to piece things together and, you know, figure out kind of like what the next steps are, because I definitely want to keep doing tech, and that's something that I wasn't expecting to love, but I fell into. And yeah, so I think that's just like, just always kind of just, it's like an improv scene, you know, you're just kind of waiting and seeing what's gonna happen next, and not trying to close any doors too hard, and just be like, okay, well, this is, because everything in my career has been like, it feels very much all over the place, but it definitely falls under the banner of, I've always been a creative person. So it's sometimes hard because I'm like, I don't know, is this a thing? Like, and there's a really interesting book. And the person who wrote it did a TED talk. And in it, she talks about the idea of being a multi-potentialite versus like a specialist, where, people who are specialists are like, okay, like I, like my best friend Matthew, like since the time we were in sophomore year together, he was taking AP Chem and being like, I'm gonna be a pharmacist. And I was like, all right, you do you, man. Like, that is too much math for me, but I'm happy you want to do it because someone has to. And then whereas like me, like I've always just kind of been jumping from creative thing to creative thing, not really knowing, but just like they say in like improv, like following the fun. And just, and it also got to a certain point as I got older of like, oh, I just need a job, which is how I wound up working at Universal, which is funny, because a bunch of the people that I went to film school with, they became best friends with the office manager who also worked in, he was, I can't remember if he, I think he was a coordinator on the Spanish Kids version of The Voice that they shot at Universal Orlando. So it was really, really, looking back, it was hilarious. Not in the moment that when the Jimmy Fallon ride opened and they had the Tonight Show in Orlando, all my friend, like a lot of the people I knew from film school got to be PAs on that shoot. And then I was the person who was like standing outside the ride, who was like the person who put like the poles in the ground for the parade at Universal telling people, like, yeah, like, you can't sit on the trash cans. And also, Jimmy Fallon isn't here, so please go away. Like, so it was wild to see them, like, and then also them, like, posting on, like, Facebook and stuff, being like, yeah, like, I got to high five Jimmy Fallon today. And I was like, I got to tell people that they need to stop sitting on trash cans for their own safety today. That's fun. But yeah, I don't know if that answers.
That's such
question.
A tech thing to be like part of, and where you're like, I was protecting the trash cans and pressing the buttons and making sure people walked in the direction they were supposed to walk. Yeah. Like, I love that you found this, that you found tech as a way to, you know, navigate your way through, especially like IRL improv. But I mean, I'll tell you, I know I said it before, but I'll say it again. Like, you have an online presence. Like I saw you before we ever talked. Like, there is a strong, like, this is an important improv lady in the online improv world. So, like, you've got that going for you, and, you know, ride that wave. Ride the wave of, like, yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard of me. I'm very important. Well, no, don't say that. People don't say that. I mean, but feel it on the inside. You know what, yeah, I mean? Where, yeah, you're like, I'm worth it to be in this room. Like, yeah, I've been connected all over the world. I've seen improv. You know, and you were talking earlier about, like, the Indian group working in playback and how, like, there's just different ways to approach improv. I feel like I didn't know anything about improv until I met everyone all over the world. And I was like, wait, you can do it this way? Wait, you can do it this way? Wait, you can do it this way? So just being open to receiving information from everyone made my mind just like expand to what the possibilities were. And I feel like, you know, now that you've become like an important person in the online improv world, now, like, you really have a place in the IRL improv world. And, you know, you bring a lot to the table because of all the things you've learned and all the connections that you've made. People would be lucky to be connected with you in any capacity, purely out of, you know, your interest and connections and the people that, you know, you've, all the books you said you've read, like, I have not read all those books. I've read parts of those books, but I have not read cover to cover the UCB manual. No, I did not do that.
That's not how you're supposed to do it.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
For a reason.
I remember I was teaching an improv class at a theater that was not UCB. And there was a student who would bring the UCB manual, like, to class and ask me questions about it. And I'm like, I don't know. That's not this school.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, that's not our curriculum. So, like, I can't help you. And if you read that while you take the class that I'm taking, that I'm teaching you, you might not get it because you're getting two different possible ideas in your brain. But anyway, you reading the books is, like, a great resource. You can tell people which ones are the right ones to read. And, like, I mean, you know, you're right at this point in your development. You should read this one, you know?
I mean, it's just like one of those things where, like, I would, like, I just, because I immediately was just like, I love doing this. I want to learn as much as I can. And it's like, it was funny because at the improv theater I started taking classes at, they, and like their little like introductory level one packet, they're like, read Truth and Comedy. And I'm just like, but we don't learn the Herald, and this is just, and then it messed me up because I was like, because I had known what the Herald was before because of like being obsessed with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, you know, and just again, wanting to be Liz, like relating way too much to Liz Lemon in middle school than I probably should have. I always share that gif where it's like Tina Fey's character being like, oh, what a week, huh? And then, Alec Baldwin's character is like, Lemon, it's only Tuesday. Like, that's just been my consistent vibe and mood since like middle school, which it's a whole thing. But yeah, so it's just like, and then I'll never forget like the 2008 election, and then Amy Poehler and Tina Fey being on Weekend Update. Ugh, like just all the Palin bits, and just that was like, I think also like Weekend Update was part of the reason why I was also interested in politics. And I think I've always been drawn, whether it was consciously or not, to the comedic aspect of it. And then, like my dream job would, because like for me, it's weird because kind of going back to like ultimate goals is because I've been all over the place that I would equally be as happy working in traditional journalism as I would comedy, as I would filmmaking. And so for me right now, I keep joking because people keep asking me, so like, what do you want to do with your MFA when you're done? And I'm like, I don't really care. Whoever offers me a job first, like, I'll take it. And so like, obviously there's things I would like to be doing, like, you know, like pipe dream goals would be to write for Full Frontal with Sam B, because people don't realize like she's like her whole writing staff is doing investigative like journalism that is actually really hardcore and like really going after people in a way that traditional, I read this Vox article, news article, like years ago, like in like 2014 or 2015 when I was in my undergrad, and I was talking about how comedic journalism is allowed to call out just the ridiculousness and be like, hey, isn't this wild? Whereas like traditional journalism is still very much playing into the, we're being objective, which as my sophomore journalism teacher said, like everyone has a bias. So there is no thing as 100% pure objectiveness. Like you're just either more or less aware that you have a bias. And so, yeah, I don't know. I lost my train of thought, but yeah, it's just... I could talk.
You're
forever.
Talking about the kinds of jobs that you would be comfortable doing, and that like, and that like, it totally seemed like the kind of job that you were into. You know, as far as ultimate goals go, and like, you know, I would say don't worry about it. Try to figure out your options for sure, but like, just appreciate and enjoy the time that you're spending on this MFA, like more so than the other college experiences that you had. This one kind of feels like it's more your choice, your journey, something that you chose and decided to go on. And so that in and of itself is, you know, sort of a different kind of journey than when you're going to college because like your parents told you to, you know, so you're already leaps and bounds, certainly, from where you were. So one final question. Thank you so much for chatting with me this whole time. What is the thing that you are doing for yourself to fill up your own cup? Like, and it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm taking improv classes. Like it could be like, you know, every night I watch 40 episodes of Parks and Rec. Like what's the thing that when you are depleted, you do this and it like helps you to get the energy and the like feelings ready again to do creative stuff?
I recently went on a trip to New York because I got tickets for the Amber Ruffin show, which was amazing, and I died because the episode was the perfect amalgamation of everything that I wanted to have happen. It was Amber Ruffin doing a weird song about spring, which I'll if you remind me, I'll send you the link to. And then I love Jenny Hagel so much. I am so obsessed with both her and Amber, and I've loved them since like they first were on Late Night with Seth Meyers doing this segment, Jokes Seth Can't Tell. And so it was a couple weeks ago, and so it was when Florida was Floridaing and passed the Don't Say Gay bill, and Jenny is a lesbian, so she came out and was like talking about like, yeah, it's been really heartwarming to see all the high schoolers come and protest. And then like she did this whole bit like talking about how like, you know, if you know we were allowed to talk about our sexuality, I probably would have known that I was a lesbian way sooner. And like of course it was like peppered in with jokes and stuff, and like it was just so exciting to just be in the same room as her and also like just hearing Florida get roasted. And it made me so happy because, like I said, it was just the amalgamation of everything that I love. And then, so also on that trip, one of my friends who I met doing online improv, we went to see the new revival of Company, which if you can ever get the chance to see it, it's so good because it's gender bent. And I'm just like, and I understand that Sondheim was still alive, so it was a little bit different of an adapt, like, you know, like a revival just because they changed some of the stuff. And I, but like, it made me, I had a lot of feelings about it because people always get caught up in like, what did the author intend? And like, it's just like, no, like art is a, is definitely like one of those things that I feel is should be representative of the time, but not like beholden to being like, oh, this is like Shakespeare, so we always have to do it in the way that like Shakespeare would have intended. Like, don't get so hung up on precious with things. And so this new revival of Company is so good. So I think for me, like, just making a point to consume other media that is not necessarily directly tied to what I'm doing is really helpful, just because I didn't really realize, because I was still doing other, like going to the movies and stuff, like pre-pandemic, how important it is when improv teachers tell you, like, you have to consume other things, because it got to a certain point in the pandemic where I was like, I'm not doing anything. I literally don't know what to talk about. Like, there's nothing, like, I forgot how humans interact with each other. I don't, like, I feel like I'm in Janet's void from The Good Place where there is nothing for me to draw from. So I think that's, and there's a really good creativity podcast called The Spark Files. And it's, they talk a lot about it, the title comes from the idea of like, no matter what you're doing, like having like either like a note on your phone or like a voice recorder or just a notebook where you like keep all the ideas of things that inspire you. So that could be anything. That could be like any books you're reading, anything you see like in the news or whatever, and it's just like a place to collect ideas. So depending on the podcast, they either interview a creative person or just like talk about things that inspire them. So I find that podcast really good. And then my other favorite podcast that I listen to for inspiration, because there was also a time when I was like, I want to be a film critic, because I got really into film studies. It's called Pop Culture Happy Hour, and it's a NPR podcast that's good. So, and then I don't know, I just listen to a lot of podcasts because I live in Chicago now, and the public transportation is amazing in comparison to Florida, where it's like, what bus?
So now you can be on the train and listening to your podcast, yeah, and like becoming a better person while getting to class.
Yeah. Yeah. I can, I, like I said, I have zero chill. So like the more ways I can multitask, I'm basically the human embodiment of that one scene in Parks and Rec where like Leslie Knope is like screaming, like, I'm calm all of the time. But yeah, so I would just like, and it also like just experiencing things. And like, I've been really lucky because I've been able to meet some of like my online friends in real life. And I'm really excited because I'm planning a trip to go to Liverpool and then Amsterdam in July. And my whole idea, and this is, I still haven't figured out how I want to flesh it out, but for me being a communications major, I feel very strongly about wanting to document the experience of the online improv community, because I think it's such a interesting thing, because like I mentioned, my undergrad journalism teacher, she, one of the things that really stuck with me that she said is, when you read a statistic, it's way easy to just kind of dismiss it and dehumanize it, but if you hear someone's story, you're more likely to connect with it. And so like, it was really interesting, like I said, to see my parents' experience of the pandemic versus mine, because it's like, last summer when India was getting just destroyed by COVID, it's like I knew people who were being directly affected, whereas my parents didn't. So it was just this abstract, scary thing that the government, you know, created. I don't know, like as a conspiracy theory. And like, I think what really keeps me coming back to wanting to continue to be a creative person that was really solidified during the pandemic is that I'm a really empathetic person. And so seeing all the things that are going on in the world gets really overwhelming. And I don't necessarily know how to affect change in any really meaningful way. But in my undergrad and my communication program, like, we talked a lot about how culture and communication is just like the stories we tell on a macro level. And so that's what really gets me excited about satire and like being able to be like, y'all are just being real dumb. Like, y'all are pulling a Florida and I'm gonna need you to not do that. So that's like the thing that keeps me back to being like coming back to being creative, even though it's really hard. And like you mentioned before, it would be easy to quit. It's just wanting to tell those stories. So that is all to say that I really want to create a documentary about the online improv community and going to meet my online friends in the style of Anthony Bourdain's No Reservation, with just like all the super unnecessary like voiceovers and like shooting it in black and white and stuff, because that was something that like Anthony Bourdain was definitely like an influence, because I grew up watching him with my dad. And so, and like I said, I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker because I saw the documentary Citizen 4, which was the one about Snowden, until I realized, like, I don't know if I want to go that hard against the government, but
like, I'm it glad seems very scary are. And yeah. It didn't go well for Snowden, but go you, yeah. Bro. Love you. Yeah. If you're listening from Russia, you're great.
Yeah. So,
oh, I think man.
That I don't know if, again, I keep saying that. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
You're telling me stories about your life. That answers all my questions. Okay. Those are the only questions I have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, this has been a total pleasure to chat with you and to connect and find out, you know, how it's been for you, you know. And I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast and to talk to me and tell me all the adventures that you've had and all the adventures you hope to have. It's been really great. And just thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, as you can tell, I like talking. So, you know. Like, all that's right. The thing, like, I'm an introvert, and people, like, it's funny, like, the people who've met me post improv are like, yeah, like, I don't, are you sure you were a shy person? I'm like, yes, like.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.